I think a lot of the authors and poets that I studied in high school have kind of fallen off the scene. But one that stands out, in particular for a poem that he wrote, was Rudyard Kipling. I don't know if you remember that name or not, but Rudyard Kipling wrote a poem that was simply entitled, If. And it's got a lot of good thoughts in it. Now, I'm not going to go through all these this morning, but simply want to point out the first line, actually the first part of the line, as he starts this poem and he says, if you can keep your head while all those about you are losing theirs. And then he goes on to describe what that's going to entail. It's an interesting phrase, maybe not used quite as much as it used to be, but still used quite often, in this idea of keeping your head. And if we are given that advice, maybe there's kind of a heated situation coming up and somebody says, now look, the way you're going to be effective is just keep your head through this discussion. We know what that means, and that's what Kipling was picking up on. However, there's someone a lot more important than Rudyard Kipling, who also gave that very good advice, and that was the Apostle Paul, who under the inspiration of the Spirit said, so that we are no longer children, tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning and craftiness in deceitful schemes. Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into Him who is the head, into Christ. Thus, when we think about the people of God and we talk about keeping our head, we're not just simply talking about the idea of staying in control of the situation. We're talking about following after Jesus Christ in every way, of obeying Him and letting His light be seen in us. This past week, for most of our young people, a few maybe still hadn't gone back quite yet, but most have started back to school. And your parents, even in this congregation, have chosen a variety of schools to go to for you. Some of you go to really big public high schools. Some of you go to a little bit smaller public schools. Some of you go to schools that maybe have more of a Christian focus. Some of you maybe go to schools that have a little bit of a different educational perspective. But whatever the case, they all have in common that they're places where there are tests. And I'm not talking about the ones your teacher gives you. I'm talking about keeping your head. And if you go to a great big public school, you're going to be exposed to lots of people with lots of different backgrounds and lots of different situations. You go to a small school, there may be a temptation there to be a 20-watt bulb rather than a 100-watt bulb when it comes to spirituality. Wherever you go, these tests are there. And oftentimes at this point in the year, maybe if a sermon is brought along these lines, it's warnings. You got to stay away from this. You got to stay away from that. You got to make sure you don't fall for this temptation or that. And those are helpful and needed. But this morning, I'd like to offer our young folks here a lesson that's much more proactive than that. It's one about keeping your head. And while I am aiming this primarily at our young people who are going into the schools every day, I want you to understand that no one needs to tune out. Because the principles we're going to talk about that we're discussing here at a very early stage in our lives are simply going to increase and grow as we continue on. And so what I'd like to do this morning is to basically allow the Apostle Paul to preach this sermon. We're going to stay in Ephesians chapter 4, and I encourage you to open your Bibles there. We'll be looking at several passages we go through, and to listen to what he would tell you, if those of you who are going to school, about how you can keep your head in this coming school year. One of the things that he's going to talk about is the idea of attitude. In fact, most of the latter part of this chapter is dealing with that concept of the kind of attitude that we are to go into as we think about becoming a new person in Christ. In fact, if you back up just a bit in chapter 4 from where we're going to look at here in just a few minutes, and you notice what the apostle is dealing with here, if you go to verse 22, he says, to put off your old self, which belongs to your former manner of life and is corrupt through deceitful desires, and to be renewed in the spirit of your minds, and to put on the new self, created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. That's what the Apostle Paul is wanting for all of us. And so, for those of you who are in school, especially those of you who are Christians already, I want you to understand that the apostle is saying what you do each day is going to demonstrate whether or not you've put off that old self and put on the new self of Jesus Christ. To illustrate that, we have to make sure that our actions are guided by an attitude that is seeking to follow Him in every way. It's very interesting to me in this section of Ephesians, as the apostle is talking about becoming this new person, that one of the things that he focuses in on quite keenly is the emphasis on controlling one's anger. In fact, if we wanted to find one verse just simply to illustrate this, it might be verse 26, where he says, "Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger." There is a place for anger, obviously. But what the apostle is saying is, look, if you are a child of God, if you are in the image of Christ, you are to make sure that that anger is always under control and only guided in the way that Christ would have you to go with it. The danger is when we let that become sinful. When we are angry and do sin. So the question that comes to mind is, well, what does that look like? If I'm someone who is trying to be like Christ, but yet I've got to grapple with this anger, what does sinful anger look like? Well, fortunately, the apostle describes that for us. In fact, if we look on down to verses 31 and 32, he's going to give us a very clear picture here. When he says, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you along with all malice." And then verse 32 will give the opposite side. But let's take a look at what he says here. He says, this is what sinful anger looks like. First of all, it's bitter. One thing I enjoy doing when studying a passage is just to look at a whole lot of different translations. And to look at all of the different words that the various translators have tried to put in, what I found remarkable is almost every translation of the Bible uses the word bitterness. As this varied group of folks who've been in charge of those translations through the years looked at this, they said this is the best one. At least most of them did. And when we talk about bitterness, it's this spirit of resenting. It's someone who is bitter because someone else has been ugly to them, has mistreated them, or maybe even there's someone who's successful and you look at that person and you're just bitter because he's succeeding or she's succeeding and you're not. And so here is this spirit that just kind of tears you up on the inside, that you're never really happy, you're never really joyful, simply because you cannot stand what someone has done to you or what you've not received. The apostle says that's one idea of being angry and sinning. And he follows that then with wrath, which if you look at the various words for it, you might find rage, or you might find fury, or you might find hot-tempered. You put them all together and you get a really good picture that here is someone who's letting it come out. It's not just this simmering inside, kind of that bitter spirit that you're just ruminating over things that make you unhappy, but you're not letting anybody know about it. Wrath is kind of like the explosion. Here it comes. Everything comes out for everyone to see. And that's followed very closely. In fact, there's not a huge amount of difference with what the apostle says with clamor. And so here is clamor. It's this wrath that's more of a rowdy, brawling, shouting, insulting. And this is where you're taking that wrath and you're letting somebody know exactly what they've done to hurt you and to cause you anger. And so you're wrathful and you're clamorous, which quite naturally progresses to slandering. Again, pretty common word in our translations, where you're abusing somebody else. because of the bitterness, and now it's coming out, and now you're upset, and you're letting it come out, and you're angry, and you begin to insult. And finally, the apostle says, all of this is illustrating a malicious spirit. The intention of sinful anger is to hurt someone else. A viciousness that goes after getting even. Turn on the evening news if you want to see every one of these illustrated. Better yet, turn on a news talk show and you can hear it immediately. And then turn it back off because it's no good for you. You've got all this going on. And the Lord is saying here, if you want to see what sinful anger looks like, here it is. You're bitter. You're wrathful. You're clamoring. You're slandering. You're just malicious. Let me tell you something, school folks, that you already know. When we talk about going to school, schools are a place of very strong emotion. And part of that is because in one complex, you're putting a lot of folks who by their very age are immature. And when you have a lot of folks who are exercising immaturity, you get that really strong emotion taking place. And so, if that tends in the direction of sinful anger, you're going to have places where you've got words and actions that are aimed specifically at hurting one another. And so here are folks at a very young age who learn how to use those angry words as a tool, as a weapon, maybe to exercise bitterness towards someone who they believe has gotten something that's not deserved or whatever the situation might be. In those situations, you must be a young light who keeps your head about you. The entire gist of Kipling's poem is that you are in control of your actions. Again, better yet, the entire gist of Ephesians 4 is you are in control of your actions. You are making the decision about how you are going to respond to these kinds of things. So simply, let me encourage you to do what any new person in Christ is supposed to do in these situations, and that's to show godliness in the face of ungodly actions. When someone is treating you in a malicious way, just remember what your Lord did when He was treated that way. Just remember what it means when your head was willing to take all of the insults and ridicule for the better. It's not going to make it easy, but it's going to give you a reason for what you do. And thus, we show godliness in those situations. And let me say this about the slander. As you think about being that young light, wherever school you're in, as you think about refraining from ungodly action, it means that you need to set a guard over your communications. One of the easiest things to do is when someone upsets us is to kind of light the fire to help at least damage their reputation a bit. Or maybe even worse, to destroy. But that's not how young lights are to behave. And I would encourage you to always pause and think before you say anything in the moment. When you feel those emotions building, when you feel the situation rising, stop and think. And perhaps in this era, more importantly, I need to say, stop and think before you type it out and hit the button. 30 years ago, you could say something bad and everybody in the room knew it. In 2021, you can put something bad on the internet and it may reach thousands of people within a day. Be careful before you do that. Think about what ungodly anger looks like and you'll see a picture of it. Go to any social media site and you're going to see people from very young ages into ages that ought to be well beyond things like this, trying to hurt, damage, or destroy the reputation of someone else. Be someone who is demonstrating in your school what Christ looks like. And might I say also with that, show respect for those in authority. There are going to be teachers and administrators and others associated with schools who are going to make decisions that you think are just horrible, and they may very well be horrible. Just remember who you are. Just remember what Jesus would do in a situation like that. And so, with the attitude, you're going to display, as the Apostle Paul says, a spirit that whereas you may have anger at times, it is never going to go beyond the boundaries of your head. Let's also think about what the Apostle says concerning integrity. As he talks about one who has been remade in the image of Christ, one of the points that he's bringing out in this section is that honesty is absolutely essential if you are going to demonstrate a Christ-like attitude. Listen to what he says, going down to verses 25 and 29. He says, "Therefore, having put away falsehood, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another." And then in verse 29, "Let the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his hands, so that he may have something to share with anyone in need." You well know that cheating is absolutely rampant in schools. Adults, you well know that cheating is pretty much rampant everywhere. I looked at a couple of surveys with this, and I don't want to bore you with a lot of facts, but I thought this was particularly interesting. I believe this is from a Princeton study. It says, statistics show that cheating among high school students has risen dramatically. According to a study conducted by Stanford University, 86% of high school students have reported academic cheating at some point in their school career. The study also found that in the past, it was normally the struggling student who was found to cheat. But today, and this is what I found so interesting, today above average and college-bound students are found to do more cheating. Over time, the education system has changed. Grades seem to matter more than getting an actual education. According to the Educational Testing Service, academic dishonesty occurs in most in math and science courses, as these are proven to be the most difficult for students. Cheating is increased due to the pressures placed on students to obtain high grades. The idea of cheating begins to take place as early as elementary school. Listen to this. There is increased motivation to cheat because there is more emphasis on grades. Even those students who say it is wrong cheat. If the goal is to get a good grade, they will cheat. Does that surprise you? The statistics do not. 86%, my experience, I'd say, yeah, I would say that's probably pretty accurate. What's intriguing is the motivation behind it. It's not to go from a 64 to a 65 anymore. It's to get the GPA that's a 4.0 because of this emphasis on grades. What that means for you is that most of your peers cheat. What that means for you, even your good influence peers cheat. And so the question then comes, what are you going to do? When it comes time to take that test, to do that homework assignment, what are you going to do? What would your head have you to do? We know the answer to that. There is an emphasis on honest day's work. That you are going in and you are doing your work. That's the gist of what the Apostle Paul is talking about here. The idea that that is what God is calling on you today to do today. I always kind of joke when I give my first test out of the year. I'll say pass with flying colors or at the very least fail with dignity. And they know exactly what I mean by that. If you don't know it, you don't know it. If you get an F, let it be your F on there. But don't fall to something that will begin an attitude of, If I can take from someone else for my own betterment, that's exactly what I'm going to do. If it's going to improve my life, I'm going to do it. Let me add just a couple of other things with that, though. Keeping your head also means sharing with those in need. If you notice the last part of verse 25, so that you may have something to share when you do that day's work. There's a place for that in school. Two of the most dreaded words that any student in high school or college hears are the two words, group project. And the reason is, you're going to get a group of 5 or 10 people, and about 2 of them are serious about what's going on. And you know what the teacher says, right? Now, you need to do this because this is going to prepare you for life. That's true. I might take it a step further. It may actually help to prepare you for being a member of a local church. Because a local church can be a lot like a group project, can it? Where you've got a few, a lot of times a minority, who are the real go-getters, making sure everything's done. A few who are along and will do it as long as there's direction. And a few who are along for the ride. To understand how to deal with all of these different kinds of groups may very well be helping you at a later time. Because I think no matter what class we're in school, there is something that's preparing you to be more spiritually minded. You know, I never dreamed when I was in English class I'd one day be having the assignments to write articles. Some of you who have gone into the math and sciences have been valuable in showing how this fits wonderfully. With biblical ideas. Within everything we find, there's something leading back to spirituality. That's the case here. So learn to do your job early. Don't be the dead weight in a group. If you've made an obligation, if you've said or been assigned, this is what you're to do, you do it. But let me also encourage you to be generous in sharing in an honest way. There are a lot of folks who are just not very academic who need somebody to help them. That's a pretty good life lesson too. How many times does God say, you know, you do for someone what that person can't do for self? And what a wonderful Christ-like spirit to say, if I have this ability, I'm going to use it to help someone else. You don't have to cheat. Rather, you're being proactive. You're showing someone the way. So I encourage all of you, regardless of your past, regardless if you've fallen into that 86% in previous times, you just start out this year and you say, I'm going to be that honest person. I'm going to be the one who does my work, not borrowing for others, but I'm also going to be the one who's helping someone else who's in need. Let me add one more thing that the apostle encourages us to do, and that's in how we treat other people. What a wonderful opportunity schools provide where we can hone the skills of dealing with others the way our head would. And so as we consider that transformation, one of the things that stands out is Paul is saying in all of these characteristics, you need to exercise the spirit of gentleness. Listen to what he says down in verse 32. Following all of those words that we looked at earlier, he says, be kind to one another. Tender-hearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you. Listen to what he says. The idea of kindness we typically think about as being pleasant and a mild disposition, and that's true, but it's always being useful to someone else. You can never be kind and inactive. It's impossible. Kindness is always illustrated in what you're doing for someone else. The apostle then says, you need to be tender-hearted. And this is the display of compassion where you're touched by the plight of someone else. There's someone who's in need and you're there for them. And then that concept of forgiveness. It is certainly the idea of releasing someone from debt to you, from guilt. But it's also that very positive of working to rebuild a relationship. So the apostle says, if you're keeping your head, you are kind. You're looking out for others. You're tender-hearted. You're touched by their plight. And you're forgiving. Now, what does that look like when it's put into place in our lives? Well, what that looks like is Jesus Christ. And so to our young saints and those who are future saints, I want to really encourage you this year to view your school experience as this opportunity, this time that you can display that gentle spirit of your head. Because to show compassion is a sign of Christ-likeness. Within the Gospels, about the only time the word compassion is used is in relation to Jesus. Every time you see compassion, it's something relating to Jesus. Those of you, well, I don't know that it matters the size of your school. I was about to say the big schools, but I'm going to take that back. Wherever you are in school, you're going to find people who are struggling. And a lot of folks are never going to say why. I learned a long time ago, there are things that go on behind the closed doors of homes that we would never imagine. You've got kids who are in situations where parents are bickering with each other. Maybe even in situations where abusive parents are, or where there's alcohol involved, or just all kinds of things. Compassion is seeing someone in need, though you may not know what the need exactly is, and being there for that person. Of being tender-hearted to the point that you're willing to help with that situation, because tender-heartedness naturally leads to that concrete action of kindness. And if I can look and be proactive in my thoughts, and more importantly, Christ-like in my thoughts, I'm looking for those who are in need, and I'm helping to be that kind of person that is kind. So what does that mean in real life? That means being a friend to those who have no friends. School can be rough, and there are young people who come in who just have zero social skills. They've come from families maybe where that wasn't present or not emphasized. And one of the saddest things to see is a child sitting all alone, maybe at lunch or wherever. And I tell you, I have been touched in a good way over the years as I've seen Christians, young Christians with their head, pick up their tray and go over and sit down with that child. You have no idea what that does. Seems like a simple thing, but that's tenderheartedness. That's compassion. You're a friend to someone maybe who's struggling and someone maybe who has difficulties. You're being there for that person. And isn't it sad when you see kids who are allowing their emotions to get the better of them and they're berating another child or slandering another child? Will you be the one to go to the defense? Aren't you glad your head did that? We were those spiritually awkward folks, weren't we? We were those that didn't have a friend. And as Michael mentioned earlier, and as Mike talked about in the Lord's Supper, what did we see? We see the Lord leave His place to come down to be our friend. I want you to be that. And I don't want to lay too much on you right now at your young age, but I do want to tell you this. You might actually be doing something that has an eternal consequence. You might be placing yourself in a situation where you're going to have the opportunity to tell someone the plan that God put into place for you. It's all about imitating Jesus. It's all about being like your head. That's what we're talking about here. And finally, let me just say this. I can almost guarantee you somebody is going to hurt your feelings this year. I can almost assure you that's going to take place. Forgive that person. Forgiveness is one of the deepest displays of spiritual maturity. It is showing an understanding of what God has done for you. So rise above the drama. Rise above. Be the kind of person who doesn't get entangled with all of the she saids, he saids, he said this about you because he heard it from... Just stay out of all of it. And if someone hurts you, just forgive. And don't be easily offended. Don't be the kind of person who takes a slight to heart. In fact, God says, just remember the times you've done it to others, and it'll put it all into perspective. Simply rising above these situations and giving yourself the opportunity to help someone who has hurt you is going to display Jesus Christ. I hope you have a good school year. And I hope you learn a lot. But one thing I want you to understand is there's a lot of education going on when the teacher's not talking. And in those situations, you can be the teacher. Don't be arrogant. Don't be haughty. Don't act like you're better than everybody else. Simply with the gentleness of Jesus Christ, display Him to others. Because ultimately what we're finding is that Christ has got to be my head at every stage of my life. And if I can get that down pat early on, the Lord can use me to accomplish great things in His service. So just remember that. And I think you'll have a good year regardless of what may happen in the next 9 months. Thank you for your good attention this morning. To have Christ as head means to become a part of His body. That's Paul's illustration. Several times he uses that. To become a part of the body of Christ, that means you are baptized into the body. You're leaving the things that we've talked about with angry sin or with slander or with running other. You're leaving all that behind. And you're saying, I want to grow into the head of Jesus Christ. I want to become like Him. Maybe this morning you're ready to commit. Maybe even there's some of our young folks here who realize that you've gotten to an age where you understand the difference between right and wrong. You know what it means. You know who Christ is. You know what baptism's all about. You just haven't taken the action. I would encourage you to do that this morning, today. And if you're scared of all these eyes looking at you, just come find me. And we'll run everybody out, and you will be baptized into Jesus Christ. Don't let another day go by without Christ as being your head. Or maybe you have not been in school for a long time and you realize that. Don't go another day without Christ as your head. Or if there's things that we can pray with you about, struggles you're facing, temptations that are pressing in on you, sins that you've committed, I know that everyone in this room will be glad to go with you to our Father in heaven for the strength that He can provide. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation this morning, won't you come while we stand and sing together?